Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to Book 3, Chapter 6, and let's dive right in. It was long since the Rostovs had news of Nicholas. Not till midwinter was the Count at last handed a letter addressed in his son's handwriting. On receiving it, he ran on tiptoe to his study in alarm and haste, trying to escape notice, closed the door, and began to read the letter. Anna Mikhailovna, who always knew everything that passed in the house, on hearing of the arrival of the letter, went softly into the room and found the Count, with it in his hand, sobbing and laughing at the same time. Anna Mikhailovna, though her circumstances had improved, was still living with the Rostovs. "My dear friend," said she in a tone of pathetic inquiry, prepared to sympathize in any way. The Count sobbed yet more.
"Nikolenka, a letter, was wounded, my darling boy. The Countess promoted to be an officer, thank God. How tell the little Countess?"
The footnotes say that Nikolenka is an affectionate diminutive of Nicholas. Anna Mikhailovna sat down beside him, with her own handkerchief, wiped the tears from his eyes and from the letter, then having dried her own eyes, she comforted the Count, and decided that at dinner, and till tea-time, she would prepare the Countess, and after tea, with God's help, would inform her. At dinner, Anna Mikhailovna talked the whole time about the war news and about Nikolenka, twice asked when the letter had been received from him, though she knew that already, and remarked that they might very likely be getting a letter from him that day. Each time that these hints began to make the Countess anxious, and she glanced uneasily at the Count and at Anna Mikhailovna, the latter very adroitly turned the conversation to insignificant matters. Natasha, who of the whole family was the most gifted with a capacity to feel any shades of intonation, look and expression, pricked up her ears from the beginning of the meal, and was certain that there was some secret between her father and Anna Mikhailovna, that it had something to do with her brother, and that Anna Mikhailovna was preparing them for it. Bold as she was, Natasha, who knew how sensitive her mother was to anything relating to Nikolenka, did not venture to ask any questions at dinner, but she was too excited to eat anything and kept wriggling about on her chair regardless of her governess's remarks. After dinner she rushed headlong after Anna Mikhailovna, and dashing at her flung herself on her neck as soon as she overtook her in the sitting room. "Auntie, darling, do tell me what it is."
"Nothing, my dear."
"No, dearest, sweet one, honey, I won't give up. I know you know something." Anna Mikhailovna shook her head. "You are a little sly boots," she said.
"A letter from Nikolenka, I'm sure of it," exclaimed Natasha,
reading confirmation in Anna Mikhailovna's face.
"But for God's sake, be careful. You know how it may affect your mamma."
I will, only tell me."
"You won't? Then I will go and tell at once."
Anna Mikhailovna, in a few words, told her the contents of the letter, on condition that she would tell no one.
"No, on my true word of honour," said Natasha, crossing herself, "I won't tell anyone," and she ran off at once to Sonya.
"Nikolenka, wounded, a letter," she announced in gleeful triumph.
"Nicholas," was all Sonya said, instantly turning white.
Natasha, seeing the impression the news of her brother's wound produced on Sonya, felt for the first time the sorrowful side of the news. She rushed to Sonya, hugged her, and began to cry.
"A little wound, but he has been made an officer. He is well now. He wrote himself," said she through her tears.
"There now, it's true that all you women are crybabies," remarked Pitcher, pacing the room with large, resolute strides. "Now, I'm very glad indeed that my brother has distinguished himself, so you are all blubberers and understand nothing."
Natasha smiled through her tears.
"You haven't read the letter?" asked Sonya.
"No, but she said that it was all over and that he's now an officer."
"Thank God," said Sonya, crossing herself. "But perhaps she deceived you. Let us go to Mama."
Petya paced the room in silence for a time.
"If I'd been in Nicholas's place, I would have killed even more of those Frenchmen," he said. "What nasty brutes they are. I'd have killed so many that there'd have been a heap of them."
"Hold your tongue, Petya. What a goose you are," I'm not a goose. But they are who cry about rifles, said Petya.
Do you remember him? Natasha suddenly asked, after a moment's silence.
Sonya smiled.
Do I remember Nicholas?
No, Sonya, but do you remember so that you remember him perfectly?
Remember everything, said Natasha with an expressive gesture, evidently wishing to give her words a very definite meaning.
I remember Nikolenka too. I remember him well, she said, but I don't remember Boris. I don't remember him a bit.
What? You don't remember Boris? Asked Sonya in surprise.
It's not that I don't remember. I know what he is like, but not as I remember Nikolenka. Him, I just shut my eyes and remember, but Boris, no.
She shut her eyes.
No, there's nothing at all.
Oh, Natasha, said Sonya, looking ecstatically and earnestly at her friend, as if she did not consider her worthy to hear what she meant to say, and as if she were saying it to someone else with whom joking was out of the question.
I am in love with your brother once and for all, and whatever happens to him or to me, I shall never cease to love him as long as I live.
Natasha looked at Sonya with wondering and inquisitive eyes and said nothing. She felt that Sonya was speaking the truth, that there was love, such as Sonya was speaking of, but Natasha had not yet felt anything like it. She believed it could be, but did not understand it.
Shall you write to him? She asked.
Sonya became thoughtful. The question of how to write to Nicholas and whether she ought to write tormented her. Now that he was already an officer and a wounded hero, would it be right to remind him of herself, and, as it might seem, of the obligations to her he had taken on himself?
I don't know. I think if he writes, I will write too, she said, blushing.
And you won't feel ashamed to write him? Sonya smiled.
No.
And I should be ashamed to write Boris. I'm not going to.
Why should you be ashamed?
Well, I don't know. It's awkward and would make me ashamed.
And I know why she'd be ashamed, said Petya, offended by Natasha's previous remark. It's because she was in love with that fat one in spectacles.
That was how Petya described his namesake, the new Count Bezukhov.
And now she's in love with that singer.
He meant Natasha's Italian singing master. That's why she's ashamed.
Petya, you're stupid, said Natasha.
Not more stupid than you, madame, said the 9-year-old Petya, with the air of an old brigadier. The Countess had been prepared by Anna Mikhailovna's hints at dinner. On retiring to her own room, she sat in an armchair, her eyes fixed on a miniature portrait of her son on the lid of a snuff box, while the tears kept coming into her eyes. Anna Mikhailovna, with the letter, came on tiptoe to the Countess's door and paused.
Don't come in, she said to the old Count who was following her. Come later.
And she went in, closing the door behind her. The Count put his ear to the keyhole and listened. At first he heard the sound of indifferent voices, then Anna Mikhailovna's voice alone in a long speech, then a cry, then silence, then both voices together with glad intonations, and then footsteps. Anna Mikhailovna opened the door. Her face wore the proud expression of a surgeon who had just performed a difficult operation and admits the public to appreciate his skill.
It is done, she said to the Count, pointing triumphantly to the Countess, who sat holding in one hand the snuff box with its portrait and in the other the letter, and pressing them alternately to her lips.
When she saw the Count, she stretched out her arms to him, embraced his bald head, over which she again looked at the letter and the portrait, and in order to press them again to her lips, she slightly pushed away the bald head. Vera, Natasha, Sonya, and Petya now entered the room, and the reading of the letter began. After a brief description of the campaign and the two battles in which he had taken part, and his promotion, Nicholas said that he kissed his father's and mother's hands, asking for their blessing, and that he kissed Vera, Natasha, and Petya. Besides that, he sent greetings to Monsieur Schelling, Madame Schoch, and his old nurse, and asked them to kiss for him, dear Sonya, whom he loved and thought of just the same as ever. When she heard this, Sonya blushed so that tears came into her eyes, and unable to bear the looks turned upon her, ran away into the dancing hall, whirled around it at full speed with her dress puffed out like a balloon, and, flushed and smiling, plumped down on the floor. The Countess was crying.
Why are you crying, Mama? asked Vera. From all he says, one should be glad and not cry. This was quite true, but the Count, the Countess, and Natasha looked at her reproachfully. And who is it she takes after? Thought the Countess. Nicholas's letter was read over hundreds of times, and those who were considered worthy to hear it had to come to the Countess, for she did not let it out of her hands. The tutors came, and the nurses, and Dmitri, and several acquaintances, and the Countess reread the letter each time with fresh pleasure, and each time discovered in it fresh proofs of Nikolenka's virtues. How strange, how extraordinary, how joyful it seemed that her son, the scarcely perceptible motion of whose tiny limbs she had felt 20 years ago within her, that son about whom she used to have quarrels with the too indulgent Count, that son who had first learnt to say pear and then granny, that this son should now be away in a foreign land, amid strange surroundings, a manly warrior doing some kind of man's work of his own, without help or guidance. The universal experience of ages, showing that children do grow imperceptibly from the cradle to manhood, did not exist for the Countess. Her son's growth towards manhood, at each of its stages, has seemed as extraordinary to her as if there had never existed the millions of human beings who grew up in the same way. As 20 years before it seemed impossible that the little creature who lived somewhere under her heart would ever cry, suck her breast, and begin to speak, so now she could not believe that that little creature could be this strong, brave man, this model son and officer, that, judging by this letter, he now was. "What a style! How charmingly he describes," said she, reading the descriptive part of the letter. "And what a soul! Not a word about himself, not a word. About some Denisov or other, though he himself, I dare say, is braver than any of them. He says nothing about his sufferings. What a heart! How like him it is! And how he has remembered everybody! Not forgetting anyone, I always said, when he was only so high, I always said." For more than a week, preparations were being made. Rough drafts of letters to Nicholas from all the household were written and copied out, while under the supervision of the Countess and the solicitude of the Count, money and all things necessary for the uniform arid equipment of the newly commissioned officer were collected. Anna Mikhailovna, practical woman that she was, had even managed by favour with the army authorities to secure advantageous means of communication for herself and her son. She had opportunities of sending her letters to the Grand Duke Konstantin Pavlovich, who commanded the guards. The Rostovs supposed that the Russian guards abroad was a quite definite address, and that if a letter reached the Grand Duke in command of the guards, there was no reason why it should not reach the Pavlograd regiment, which was presumably somewhere in the same neighbourhood. And so it was decided to send the letters and the money by the Grand Duke courier to Boris, and Boris was to forward them to Nicholas. The letters were from the old Count, the Countess, Petya, Vera, Natasha and Sonya, and finally, there were 6,000 rubles for his outfit and various other things the old Count sent to his son. All right, there we have it, another episode down. And it seems like this letter from Nikolai Rostov has reached the Rostov household and caused quite a stir. It was a really cool chapter to see how this letter impacted the whole family. And I think my favorite thing about this chapter was seeing young Natasha figuring out what was going on just by observing her parents and Anna Mikhailovna. You kind of already had a picture of her as quite a savvy kind of kid, but now you see her as genuinely perspicacious. She can figure out exactly what's going on. And again, it was another chapter where I thought that she's one of my favourite characters of the book so far. There was some interesting discussion around this chapter. One question was around why Anna Mikhailovna is living with the Rostovs now. Kansas 57 asked, "What do you think her motivation is for staying with the Rostovs? Has she gotten all she wants already?" Lord Mighty Kabunga said, "If we have learned anything from reading the previous chapters, it would be that improving one's status is done by career, money and marriage. Mikhailovna is trying to seal the deal between Boris and Natasha." Who Was Once Delight responded, "Anna also knows how uncertain fortune is. She's fallen out of it once and would be unlikely to leave secure footing now. She needs to be where she can watch what is going on and make her plans. That said, I do think she had a genuine friendship with the Countess Natalia, a friendship she is willing to exploit, yes, but I don't think she is faking her affection. I wonder why we heard nothing of Boris through the whole war chapter, though. Where was he? That's a good question. Where was Boris? I'm sure we'll find out in the coming chapters. Another question asked by Kansas 57 was, how does this chapter show the difference in understanding of war between the men on the lines and the families back home? Is this difference in understanding good or not? Must be really hard to get a clear picture of what's going on over in the war when, you know, the only communication you can get is feedback, you know, news that's carried back about sort of the war on the whole, a general overview of what the troops are doing, and you're going to be quite a few days behind at all times with that. And if you're really lucky, you'll get a letter, which may have taken weeks or more to reach you from your loved one. Joyce Haddo said, it's fascinating to me how the lines and frequency of communication have changed for families and service members now that we have email and Facebook and Skype. A letter from Nicholas is a rare, momentous event. It might be the first time they have heard from him since he left for the army. Months, maybe. And they have to plan and scheme on how to get a letter back to him. When my son was in the Navy, on an aircraft carrier out of Japan, we could email him and get a response in minutes when he was not at sea. We had a Skype call where he showed off his push-ups. Someone on board his ship had the job of posting pictures of life on the USS George Washington to Facebook. Certainly is a very, very different situation. And I think receiving that letter, handwritten letter, which has travelled so far and for weeks to arrive, there'd be this feeling of how fragile this little piece of paper is, and it's kind of a miracle that it's managed to travel. You know, how many different hands have taken responsibility for passing this letter on to get it to you? I can imagine the feeling would be quite overwhelming. Finally, Kansas 57 asked a question which doesn't relate particularly just to this chapter, but it was around the concept of love within this book. Kansas 57 noted that it's not always clear what the characters mean when they're talking about being in love, and wonders if there's something in the translation that maybe doesn't match up exactly with how English speakers would use the word love. Quittisett responded to this. Quittisett's reading the more Russian translation of the book. And they said, the words Sonya uses in the original have similar sentiment to the English love, in the sense that they can connote both romantic and non-romantic love. Sonya uses the verb polyubit when she says, I fell in love, which has the connotation of coming to love something or someone. I could use the same word to describe coming to love my best friend, my dog, my house, or coffee, but as in English, in this context, it does have a romantic overtone. Rogue Piano said, sort of another take on the topic of love. I thought the paragraph describing the Countess reading the letter was particularly touching. I loved the detail that Nicholas's first words were pear and granny. I was also moved by the line, her son's growth towards manhood at each of its stages had seemed as extraordinary to her as if it had never existed, the millions of human beings who grew up in the same way. This feels like a universal statement on the experience of parenthood, where every parent feels that their child is unique, yet that experience repeats itself across the world and generations. I hope to come back to this book in a few decades and see how I feel about it then. We must have very similar tastes, Rogue Piano, because those two moments that you mentioned there about Nicholas's first words and about the growth towards manhood and how it seems unique to every person, those were two moments that really stood out to me as my favourite parts of that chapter, and maybe even some of my favourite parts of the novel so far. Rogue Piano also asked the question, does anyone else question whether those 6,000 rubles will actually make it to Nicholas? I had the same thought as well. I don't see 6,000 rubles in cash making it that distance. Now here's another interesting note. Who Was Once Delight pointed out that in the PNV translation, it said that Nicholas's first words were brush and mama. I wonder why the different translations, they ask. Betsy Tacey said, The original is Grusha, or pear, and Baba, or grandma. I wonder if they chose those English equivalents for the way they sounded rather than what they meant. Libby Stitch says, in my translation, the Briggs one, it doesn't give the words at all. It just says his first little words. Very interesting there to note the differences in those three translations. But all the same, it was a nice moment for the mother to reflect on his very first words while she's reading this letter that he's sent from the front lines of a war. All right, I'll wrap it up there for today. A big thanks to those who have been sharing the podcast and shouting it out on their social media platforms. I have noticed a bit of a spike, a bit of a jump in listeners. The last 2 days have been up over 150 listens per day, as opposed to the usual 130. So it is making a difference, and I do truly appreciate that. If you could find it in your heart to do me that favour once more and keep sharing the podcast with your friends and family, I would very greatly appreciate the help. Thank you very much for listening today, and I will see you tomorrow.